Welcome to the Israel Answers series, connecting Israel, the Bible, and you. Join Susan Michael as she explores timely issues and current events from a scriptural perspective to equip the Christian world with a balanced and biblical response. Be sure to subscribe for future episodes, which will ignite your faith and bring the Bible to life in your everyday world. Now, let's join Susan with your Israel Answers.
Hi, we are here at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Dallas, Texas. I'm Shelley Neese, Coordinator for American Christian Leaders for Israel, a project of ICEJ USA. And I have here with me Dr. Chris McKinney, who's actually been a longtime friend of mine for the last 5 years and was once one of my professors. He is an archaeologist. He graduated from Bar-Ilan University. He's one of the archaeologists associated with the Tel Berna dig. And he's doing something pretty unique. Not all archaeologists get involved in media and the documentary business, but I went to his screening yesterday. He has just been part of a major documentary called The Legends of the Lost Ark. It's got, now that I'm saying it out loud, it definitely has an Indiana Jones-ish title.
So. Yeah, that was intentional.
Intentional.
First of all, great to see you. We had great times in class and, you know, filming some things. And so it's wonderful to be here at the conference. And thanks for having me on.
Of course.
Legends of the Lost Ark. It has been a labor of love over the last few years.
How many years would you say that the film took?
So the film itself, this version of the film, I think it's taken about 2 years, but there's another kind of 2 years of development and made other projects that kind of coalesced into this one. But I'd say for this version, really 2 years of work, and especially over the last year, intense amount of filming and post-production. But as of about a month ago, or maybe two weeks ago, we have the full film. And so we're at the end of this process and the beginning of a new process of trying to get it in front of eyeballs. And so we're really, really excited about it, about Legends of the Lost Ark.
Now, obviously, you know, you say the Ark of the Covenant and you swing a bag of bread and you will hit 10 people that can't get the Ark of the Covenant out of their mind for lots of reasons, right? It's one of the most unique objects in the entire Bible and really also connects to what we believe theologically, that God wants to abide with us and among us. So it has all the elements of speaking to us because of how God wants to relate to us, but also really teaching us a lot about the Old Testament and the way that the Jewish people first learned how to relate to God. So first, just tell me, what does the Ark of the Covenant mean to you? How did you get involved in researching and telling this story as both a believer and an archaeologist?
Yeah, so the Ark, it's one of those things that's such a big topic and has so many entry points that it can be hard to narrow it down. And I think for most people, what they've narrowed it down to is kind of two things. One, this weapon that you don't want to touch because your face might get melted off, like we see in an excellent film, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And it's there in the Bible. They're pretty adjacent to the biblical story in some ways.
It is. And the other is that it's this end times kind of element that if it appears, that means prophecy kicks off and things like that. And so for me, what was really shocking, I've studied and have a PhD in archaeology, writing a lot, is as you begin to kind of unpeel the layers of what the story of the Ark is, you see that it's so central. I mean, I even start to think of the temple itself in the first temple and the tabernacle itself are important. We normally say the temple and the tabernacle, but they don't matter without the Ark. I mean, and so if we think of these kind of degrees of holiness, the Ark, which is God's throne and a repository for His law, you know, the Ten Commandments, as well as the Book of the Covenant, which is right beside it, that's really at the core of the story. And so to me, it has connections throughout the Bible. You could make the case that if the New Testament is about Jesus, and it is, and Jesus's experience in an incarnated form, both to the cross, you know, a resurrection, ascension, and then in Acts, giving, commissioning the apostles, the acts of Jesus through the apostles, and all of that is about Jesus. In some ways, the Hebrew Bible is all about God's presence on the ark. And so that's why I like to think of it as the incarnation of the Hebrew Bible. And it both tells us why it's so significant, but also how it pointed to the next incarnation and its limitations, right? You have this restricted access, restricted, you know, the impurity that if you're becoming in connection with it. And so that to me is why it's such a big story. But I think if I were to just say one thing that kind of ties the two testaments together, it's this physical object. It's this incarnation of God taking on the flesh of the tabernacle, like John talks about, and enshrining in this box his spirit as well as his law. And there's just so many different ways you can think about that, you know, moving forward. So it's a huge topic, which is why in the movie, in Legends of the Lost Ark, which one of those threads do you kind of pull on?
Well, that's what I was going to say. You say it's a big topic in the Bible, and absolutely it is, until it's not.
Yes.
So that's really where the movie picks up, is we all share, I mean, assuming that our audience is Bible readers, Bible believers, we all know the central place that the ark takes.
Yeah.
And then it falls out of the Bible, and we don't hear of its fate. We don't hear what happened to it. And that's where the non-canonical text sort of fill in some gaps. And so you really lean on those and explore those in the film. And like anyone dealing, you know, with the Apocrypha, the Pseudepigrapha, maybe if they're not canonical or the same level of inspired, they are certainly fun history.
Yeah.
And worth exploring. I mean, these are ancient texts. When do we ever disregard ancient texts?
Right.
So tell me, what were your clues in using non-canonical literature outside of the Bible and how to pursue the ark? Since the Bible goes quiet and silent about the ark.
So the last we hear about the ark in the Bible is in Jeremiah 3:16. You know, not John 3:16, Jeremiah 3:16. And it says it won't be remade, it won't come to mind, and Jerusalem itself will become the throne of the Lord. And there's kind of cryptic things kind of scattered throughout Jeremiah. You know, he says, Lord, remember your glorious throne right before the Babylonians are coming. We have in 2 Chronicles a reference. Josiah says something like, oh, priests, take the ark and put it in this place. And you're like, huh? What's going on? Like, so it's, that's why Indiana Jones is wrong, by the way. It wasn't taken by Shishak. You know, it was there in these other texts. So Jews living in the Second Temple period, in a time period that we call the intertestamental period sometimes, and from about, you know, let's say 530 BC up and through the time of Jesus, they had to grapple with how do we have a house of God that has an altar and sacrifice and a priesthood, and we're living under foreign rule, and we don't have our own king, the son of David, who has his throne over here, like, you know, Psalm 110 says, the Lord sit at my right hand, or Psalm 2. And we also don't have the throne of our God. Mm-hmm. What do we do with that? And so it seems in this period that people started to think about what that means and deeply desire for its return. And so there's this, I think, earnest expectation that you can read in a book like Ezra chapter 2, where they rebuild the temple, and it's like they're following what Solomon did. You know, they got cedars coming in from Lebanon, and the priests are there, and they got sacrifice. And right at the moment where in 1 Kings 8, Solomon, you know, in about 950 BC, brings in the ark, and the cloud appears, and there's great shouting and joy, and they can't stand in the presence. The elders of the people who can remember Solomon's temple and all its glory, they weep. And it's this amazing moment where the weeping and the joy are mingled. And I think that moment really encapsulates the heart of what these legends are all about. Like, what happened to it? How could God's throne, that was the center of their faith for 400 years in this temple, how could it just go away? Where could it be? And so these legends crop up. Our earliest dates to about 120, 130 BC in the book of Second Maccabees. It's early. But even in that form, and it's in terms of it's written down, it could very well be a reflection of earlier tellings. I mean, so much of this is passed in the form of oral discussion of where did this go? And so we only get the final record when somebody, you know, writes it down. And so we wanted to explore these early legends. And so you talked about the Apocrypha and the Pseudepigrapha. We thought that most people, when they think about what happened to the Ark, they're looking at it from the, from now back. So they're encountering stuff that's more modern. It's the, you know, the Ron Wyatt garden tomb, which is problematic. And sorry if you like that, it's really problematic. Or it's the Ethiopia idea, which is totally, late. I mean, it's 14th century, you know, Bob Cornuke and Graham Hancock, all these theories. Those are not based on anything other than really late ideas. Whereas we wanted to go back to the earliest sources, and it turns out that there's these three. One that seems to suggest that the Ark is hidden somewhere between Mount Hor and Mount Nebo in this mysterious place called The Rock. That's in a book called The Lives of the Prophets, and specifically the life of Jeremiah in that book. And then there's another legend about the one that's more well known is the one that's hid in the tomb of Moses on Mount Nebo or near Mount Nebo. And then the granddaddy of them all, is another thing that we read about in the Pseudepigrapha and a couple different books, that talks about how Jeremiah and his colleague Baruch, take the Ark and they hide it, in and around the Jerusalem Temple Mount. And it's from that later tradition, which dates to, we don't know exactly, but sometime in the late Second Temple period, maybe in the first century AD, that the Jewish tradition, which we know well, whether it's Montague Parker digging on the Temple Mount and causing all kinds of problems in the 20th century, or it's various rabbis tunneling underneath in the Western Wall tunnels. That's what those traditions are based on. And so we actually go even further back than the Mishnah and the Talmud that have these kind of reflections to the earliest forms to explore them. And to me, I think what's so fun is, of course, it'd be great if we found it. But what's so fun is you find the story matters. It matters now. It matters then, and it mattered, and the Ark matters. It matters all the way through the Bible. I mean, Revelation 21 is an allusion to the Ark. I mean, where we have the throne of God and the throne of the Lamb set up in Jerusalem and the river of life from Psalm 1 and from Genesis 2 flowing to the city. I mean, what is the throne? It's the Ark. And so it's this literary device as well as an actual device that ties these stories in that center part, the part that we're just missing, and kind of the trail went cold after Jeremiah's moment, is what we try to explore in that film while also getting you into the whole story. Because I just don't think that people, even though they know about the Ark, they don't necessarily know how well connected it is to the whole story.
Right. Yeah, without spoiling anything in the film, it does a really good job exploring the three legends that you mentioned, putting Jeremiah at the center of the story because he is connected to it, most of the legends in some way or another, but also just, describing the way the architecture of the Ark would have looked like, why the Israelites would have maybe needed this device during their time of wandering. You know, like, it just touches on a lot of the actual history of the Ark in the Bible and what we would know from Egyptology and modern archaeology that help inform us, I guess, what isn't said in the Bible, but is illuminated by archaeology as well.
Sure. I think that's, to me, that's where the archaeology really comes into play. I'm someone who likes texts and archaeology, and I try to combine the two. And that's where the pseudepigraph and apocrypha stuff allowed me to do so in historical geography and things like that. But in terms of the archaeology, there's been a movement in the last decade or so that people have said, well, look at King Tut's tomb. Look at these things going on in Egypt that are acacia wood box chests covered in gold, and they have these winged beings on them. We even have one. Poles. They're carrying poles by priests and fine linen. And they're like, I have a great idea. Maybe the Ark is like this. Maybe the Ark is connected. And what I found is that is a good idea. And I tried to follow up on these aspects and come up with, you know, several of my own, including, you know, designing an Ark that we made for the film. But what I found that was so fascinating is that connection that the Ark has a New Kingdom Egyptian background is something that was already, well established. When the first European explorers went to Egypt, they'd see these things and they say, oh, this is just like the Ark in the Bible. And so what we're exploring is actually a rediscovery of how these things are connected with one another. And to me, it's not only fascinating because we can say, well, what would the Ark look like? Because if you just read the text, as you said, I mean, you got an identical text twice in Exodus, and you read it and you're like, okay, it's got winged beings, it's got poles, it's made from these. But if you can't actually go make it and know exactly what it would look like, you have to fill in the cultural gap somehow. And I think what we should fill in is with the time period in which it was made. And so that's what we tried to do. And there's all kinds of other aspects we could say about that. But, you know.
It's always fun if you get to make an Ark reproduction. Well, so Chris, tell us how can people watch the documentary? Where do people find it?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do is to follow us on our YouTube channel, Behind the Bible at Gesher Media. Right now, we are in talks for distribution. So we're hoping that it will be in theaters very, very soon, sometime within the next year, and distributed in various capacities. So we don't have an immediate thing we can point you to.
What's Gesher's website, though?
GesherMedia.com.
So at GesherMedia.com, they could also sign up for your
yes.
emails and then get information about the first release, probably.
Absolutely.
Well, I would say I look forward to seeing it, but I already got to see it at NRB, and it's wonderful, and I highly recommend it. And it may be about archaeology, but it is also about our relationship with God and about Jesus, and so I highly recommend it. Thank you so much for
Thanks,
coming
Shelley.
On the show.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Out of Zion with Susan Michael. Be sure to subscribe to Out of Zion now on Apple Podcasts, cpnshows.com, YouTube, or wherever you like to listen and learn. Out of Zion with Susan Michael is a production of ICEJ USA, all rights reserved.